The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game here on VSiN. It is Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander. Kelly Bidlin is behind the glass. However, familiar voice, familiar face for you fans of the show. Wanted to talk a little NFL, and it was mainly because I saw an article that was written that I thought was very, very interesting. I immediately sent it to Kelly, and I said, hey, by the way, hold on to this for 2 weeks, because I'm coming on the show in 2 weeks, and I want to talk about this with you on air, because, look, it's something that will get brought up when we get to, like, week 16, 17, 18. When we get to that, this stuff will start coming out. But for us to maybe look at it ahead of time, and to at least have it out there, is there anything that may or may not tip us one way whenever we're looking at some of these season-long prop-type situations? But, Kelly, a really good article that was written, I think it was on the 33rd team that it was written, about all the various incentives and things like that are going on in the NFL with some of the big players that signed some of these deals. And, you know, we can start off with Daniel Jones, and there's just, you know, an incredible amount of incentives for Daniel Jones. And if you're watching at home, which, by the way, you should be, VSiN.com, VSiN Plus subscription, $9.99 free trial. Limited time offer, though. You want to hurry and get on that because things can go up. It could be $19.99 by the time you go at it. But Daniel Jones, I mean, listen, this is just a huge list of incentives for Daniel Jones. And listen, don't think that these guys don't know this, and don't think that these guys don't understand when they start getting close to these things, like 19 or more touchdown passes or rank in the top 15 of the NFL in touchdown passes, he gets a quarter milli. 25 touchdown passes, he gets another $375,000. If he gets 31 touchdown passes, another $375,000. If he can throw for 3,325 yards, he gets a quarter million dollars. If he can throw for 3,800 yards, he gets another $375,000. It goes on and on and on with Daniel Jones. And these are all things that are performance-based incentives, that some of which are, in fact, attainable. I mean, some of the, you know, listen, 4,700 or more yards, he gets another 37, you know, listen, like 4,700 yards is a lot of yards. Like Daniel Jones ain't throwing over to 4,700 yards, but could he possibly throw for 3,700? Could he possibly get to 27 touchdowns? All these different things where he's going to be making, Kelly, I mean, in theory, I kind of tallied it up for Jones and the stuff that I thought that was at least realistic for him. And he can make another couple million dollars this year if he's able to hit about half of these incentives that I think are within the realm of possibility.
Yeah. And it's the look, quarterbacks obviously have the most control over this stuff, but it is, you know, you led into it well. I think it's something, this is a good exercise to at least look at the beginning of the season, because this is always a reality in the final week, 2 weeks of the season. And it's always brought up how that there's a receiver out there that needs three more catches. Yeah. And, you know, shocker, in the fourth quarter, the ball's going to him a lot.
Yeah, I mean, these quarterbacks want to take care of their dudes, and they're going to do that, which is why, I mean, we can take a look. Because we have Odell's stuff, right? And so, like, let's look at Odell's stuff here. And, you know, he just signed the one-year deal with the Ravens, but it was pretty contract. It was pretty incentive-laden as well. And you take a look with Odell. I mean, 30 receptions, you would think this guy can't catch 30 passes, but that's worth a quarter million dollars. 40's worth a half a million. 50's worth $750,000. If he can get 60 catches on the year or lead the team in receptions, it's another $1 million for him. And then it continues to kind of trickle up with Odell, just as far as the yardage that he's able to get over the course of the season, starting just at 250 receiving yards, he gets another quarter of $1 million in all of this. Yeah. So whenever you look at these, you know, deals, I mean, listen, Odell, $1 million is $1 million. I don't care how rich you are. $1 million is $1 million. And if you think that guy doesn't have, if he's sitting at 58 catches with a game or two left, that he ain't going to be screaming at Lamar to throw the ball to him, and he ain't going to be looking at all those. Like, these are things that are going to be coming up. By the way, if he gets to 1,000 yards, he gets another cool $1 million, does Odell Beckham. 9 touchdowns also gets him another $1 million. So you can see, again, Odell has a chance to make several $1 million in contract incentives as well. And these are all things. 750 receiving yards is 750K. So just, we can kind of keep in mind, and this might be something that we can, Kelly and I can just, you know, be sure to keep in touch, and we can kind of monitor some of these as we move along. But, you know, does what does this do from a season-long perspective? Like, what are these guys going to be doing? I mean, you see Odell, the number is just at 575. It's not very high on Odell. He was brought in and certainly was paid, Kelly, to be their number one, right? I mean, he was this is not like a guy that was brought in to be a number two. And so we're talking fewer than 600 yards needed for him to get his over on his yearly prop at 575.5. I know there are injury concerns. I know that he didn't get signed at the end of last year because people were worried about those injury concerns. I think the Ravens are a sharp organization. I cannot imagine that the Ravens would give a dude $15 million or up to $15 million with all these incentives and stuff. Like, if they didn't feel pretty confident in where he was going to be come time to take some snaps in week one. So, again, I know we don't like to play overs, but it would be an over or pass for me on Odell because, again, like getting to 600 receiving yards is really not all that much for if you are a true number one in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, and you're talking about – I think you got to look through this. There was a lot made of that, right, of Odell not getting signed by a team at the end of the year, but, like, that injury timeline was still really short.
It really was.
And what we're talking about now is a way more realistic timeline for him to return to action and be – Not only way healthier than what we're talking about last November, last December, but be what? I mean, near 100% or as good as he's going to be going forward at this age. And look, when we last saw him on the field, Matt, he was incredibly important for what the Rams were doing down that stretch. So, bundle all
that
together.
How many guys you think got to 576? In the NFL last year.
How many guys got to 576?
Yeah, because he's 575.5. How many guys got to 576?
50.
65 different guys.
Actually, I was surprised I was that close.
Got to 576 receiving yards last year. By the way, that includes Alec Pierce, Khalif Raymond, Paris Campbell, David Njoku, got over this. Yes,
okay,
I know.
So real basic math, that's basically two receivers a team, right?
Yes. So KJ Osborne got to this receiving number. Again, just say it's baked in the health. I mean, obviously the health is baked into this number, and this is assuming that he's not going to play what? 5-6 games over the course of this year, because again, you are talking KJ Osborne got to 576 receiving yards last year.
I mean, he's going to roll into camp though as what, the number two wide receiver, if that, like, and you're talking about a new offense, right? A new offensive coordinator in camp there in Baltimore that we've been hearing about is this heavier passing attack that the Baltimore Ravens are going to incorporate. That would be overs all day on Odell.
Listen, I know there is an injury history there, and so I get all of that. But, again, there are very few organizations I really look at and do say I think they're sharp.
Yeah.
And I think the Ravens fall into that category. I think they are pretty sharp, and I can't imagine they're going to bring in a dude to pay him that much money if they were really and truly concerned about what he was going to be able to contribute from the team. One more I want to look at real quick. Juju Smith-Schuster was definitely signed to be the number one there for New England. Of course, there are rumors out there that DeAndre Hopkins is going to be visiting, and he would certainly take over that number one role if that was the case. That's why I wanted to that Juju wanted to include him here, Kelly, because, listen, there are incentives in this contract. 950 more receiving yards gets him $750,000. If he can get to 1,100, he gets him another $750,000. So, again, if he can get to 1,101 yards, that's a $1.5 million bonus for Juju Smith-Schuster. Problem being here for Juju Smith-Schuster is if they do sign another receiver, then his especially if that receiver happens to be DeAndre Hopkins, his looks are going to get cut by a substantial amount. And so, unlike what we were talking about with Odell, it would only be unders for me from a Juju standpoint. One, another guy that does have his own health concerns, so we can talk about that. Also, no longer has Patrick Mahomes throwing him the football, which is a pretty big thing, I might add. And if the Patriots do end up trying to add depth at that receiver position, you know, listen, there's no loyalty to Mac Jones to Juju Smith-Schuster, right? I mean, they have no rapport. They have no chemistry. They have no history together. So whoever that guy might be, whoever Mac Jones enjoys throwing the ball to the most, is going to get a bunch of looks here. So unlike these other guys, even with those incentives for him, I would be under or pass.
Yeah, completely under or pass. And actually, it might even get close to a bet for me if you were looking at this now. Because even if it's not DeAndre Hopkins, and I know there's not a whole lot of other guys out there. But
they got to add something.
Yeah, I'm like, are the Patriots really running into this season with this wide receiving group that I'm looking at right now?
I know.
And I mean, look, this team had its offensive struggles last year, too, even if we want to just talk about that part of the game. Mac Jones took a step back last year. I think we all expect him to find at least a middle ground between what he did his rookie year and last year in this third season. But, man, I don't think you can forget that when you're looking at some of these props.
Since we don't have enough time to get to a couple of these other things that we'll get to, and we'll do that at 8:30, so stick around, 8:30 Pacific, talk about some Bryce Young props, some Justin Herbert props, things like that. I think these are fairly interesting with some of the news coming out of minicamp here as we've got this going on. But, Kelly, I mean, we'll just keep on going with the Patriots. For me, Patriots are one of my bigger fades of the year. I have an under on them already from a win total perspective. And it's a couple of different things, right? I mean, if you look on paper, you just looked at the wide receiver core and can't even believe that that's what they're going in.
Yeah.
Like, they are the most inferior team in that division by a long shot from a player perspective. Then they have the worst quarterback in the division by a long shot as well at this point. And then if you just look at the end of the day, they have the hardest schedule in all of the NFL, and that actually does matter. So you're talking about a lot of things that are working against this Patriots squad. And Bill Belichick's never going to say, hey, yeah, we're rebuilding and we're, you know, whatever. That's just not in his nature. But I think also Bill Belichick, as the football guy, has to look at that roster and understand, listen, we're not going to be able to compete this year. This is not a team that can get it done. We might be better off trying to climb up the draft board a little bit and try and see if we can't improve this roster a ton. So, again, I'm a big fade here.
Seven and a half.
Of this New England Patriots team. Ben Wilson talking some college baseball when we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure and visit VSiN.com to check out the current betting splits data.
Split bets.
Want to know where the money and the bets are moving for every game. Betting splits page updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes so you can see the changes in all of the action. Betting splits. Another way VSiN's here to make you a smarter, better year-round. VSiN.com to get all them splits. Get on over there and get them splits.
Get them splits.
I still haven't figured out a better golfer than Tyrrell Hatton for a bar fight. I was looking. Maybe Big Rig Higgs. I think the Big Rig might be able to throw down a little bit if it came down to it. So I can't say for certain.
That's why I started with pound for pound, okay? Because, come on, those are completely different weight classes.
Yeah, but I think I'd still rather have Tyrrell Hatton than Bryson DeChambeau, and Bryson DeChambeau weighs 375 pounds and nothing but solid muscle, elk meat, you know? Like, that's all he's got going on, you know? Yeah, like, I'd still probably rather have Tyrrell Hatton because he'll fight dirty, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he'll fight dirty. You know, let's see who Ben Wilson would have, one of the fine hosts here on this network. Ben, you're sitting there at a bar, a guy's messing with you. You have a professional golfer to your right. You know you're about to have to throw down. What professional golfer do you want in this bar fight situation?
I mean, it's obvious. It's John Daly. The unhinged nature of his ability to be totally off the rails is who I would want.
I guess, I just don't know how scrappy John is or how much he would care.
I think he's – no, that's a good point. I think he's got a lot of tricks. You know, he's got the old school, the below-the-table tricks that nobody would even see, that you would just – all of a sudden you're like, wait, what just happened?
That's true.
And then he's smoking a cigarette while he's fighting. It kind of throws you off. I know on the other end of the spectrum, it's a tie between Jeff Sluman and Matthew Fitzpatrick for golfer I would least want to
– Yes. Well, Fitzpatrick is up there. Fitzpatrick is up there for sure. There's no doubt about that.
If we're going to the olds real quick, I think Robert Allenby deserves a shout out too, just because we know he's gotten into bar fights before.
Yeah, I mean, there is that. I think we're on to something here. We might have to get some power ratings for next week or whenever we come on here. Ben, before we get into the college baseball stuff, I mean, I know you're a big tennis guy. You and I texted a couple of different times throughout the course of the tournament. We go on, we see Djokovic take it down. Do you where is your kind of hierarchy now from a GOAT perspective? That seems to be the talk. It seems to be the narrative here. And I hear some people who are still on Federer, and look, I'm the biggest Federer guy on the face of the planet, but I think I have to, at some point, when one guy has won all three Grand Slams three different times and has done it in a couple of different eras as well, I think I do have to at least face the reality that maybe it is actually Djokovic.
No, and I'm definitely at that point too, because let's be realistic about the, you know, the Federer and the Nadal conversations. It's always been, you know, because we are, you know, as human beings interpreting this stuff from a just legacy perspective, we're all always thinking about the person, right? And Federer was the classiest, most willing to speak to the, you know, the media, both him and Nadal. And so I think that definitely played a role in this over the years, just the most like the graceful competitors that they were. And Djokovic has always kind of been that third, like that bratty type guy who comes in, and, you know, and he was the guy who was riling up Federer at Miami all those years ago when Djokovic was like 17, and he's the one who's kind of crashed the party. But you can't discount the longevity for Djokovic and the fact that he is still at this level, the fact that his fitness is still world class, and he's almost 40. Like it's just unbelievable what he has done. So I'm definitely there on him being the best of all time, as much as I think a lot of people in the tennis world would be begrudgingly having to admit that. I think it's probably time based on what he has just done.
I am never going to forgive the people in Roger Federer's camp for not talking him off of that 40 square inch racket head that he used like way after it was unnecessary. Like everyone had moved to these like much bigger rackets and he kept using that tiny little racket, and it just like I am still to this day, I believe that cost him at least a couple more Grand Slams because he was playing with equipment that was just out of date. Like, I get it. You felt comfortable with it. But, I mean, everyone else had moved to these powerful rackets with the bigger heads on it. And, like, you just saw – how many times did we see Fed mishitting all of those heavy topspin balls from Nadal and all of a sudden? It's like, dude, just switch your equipment. When he finally did, he started playing well again.
Yeah, I know. I still – like, I was – convinced that his, you know, he would make a final comeback. Like he would get to a point where he could get back to a physical level, just because we're so used now to these athletes at, you know, 40 plus, you know, looking like they can do it. And I remember telling Gildas, I think we talked about this. I really felt like this 2023, like Wimbledon would be it for him. He would get the body to a position where he could come back. And sometimes it doesn't work that way. And it kind of gave on him. And it's such a shame that that's how it ended up happening, that all of a sudden, it's this random Laver Cup that nobody ever cares about or watches, and that's it.
I got now that I get to thinking about it, guys, mind wanders, you know, through the course of a segment. Listen, I have an outright on him this week, but let me tell you, I don't know how much damage Colin Morikawa could do if we were in a bar. I mean, he's slight of build to begin with. Seems like the nicest guy ever on the face of the planet. Like, I don't know if he's going to need to get down and dirty like I need him to do in a bar fight. So we've got that. Over on the college baseball side of things, Wake Forest is your favorite to take it down. Eight teams left here, plus 260-ish out there for Wake Forest. LSU, your second shot. Florida, Virginia, Tennessee, TCU, Stanford, and then Oral Roberts bringing up the rear as far as the College World Series goes. I've actually had the pleasure of going up to Omaha, taking in the College World Series. It is an awesome experience. It is unlike going to a road football game. People aren't spitting on you and throwing things at you and calling you names because you're kind of all there together and you're going to see the same people over and over again over the course of the next several days. And so everyone kind of gets together and parties a little bit together and stuff. It's a really great experience. If you can ever make the College World Series, I highly, highly recommend it. But Ben, as we head into this thing, we got eight teams left. Who do you like and why is it LSU?
Well, look, you and I know, Matt, when you're an alum of an SEC school, you know, baseball, yes. You just understand right?
Yes, nothing screams SEC like Missouri. Yes,
Missouri.
Yeah. Nothing screams SEC like Missouri.
I know. We just understand. It just means more. I'm in the SEC. So coming in, I only had two futures made this year. One was Vanderbilt 25-1. One was TCU 40-1. TCU, we're still live, still going. And so I would tell, for the people out there, I know a lot of people have made futures throughout either the regular season or during regionals, super regionals. The whole hedging philosophy is very, very different once you get to Omaha, because it's not just, you know, it's not like we're in the divisional round of the NFL, right? It's like we have a double elimination, eight-team tournament. There are so many ways this thing can go. And so I look at it, and I've tried to identify like the one team in each bracket I like, just based on the depth of pitching, depth of hitting. And, you know, I keep going back to Wake Forest at the top, and it's not sexy, they're the short shot, but I think at a certain point, we've kind of been ignoring them this whole postseason run simply because There wasn't that perceived, you know, hashtag value on betting Wake Forest. But I did add them to the account. I basically went with one team from each bracket just as a, you know, an immediate, let's just see what happens. Let's see how far I can ride out this TCU ticket. But I also want two other teams I like in pocket. Wake Forest with the two-time ACC Pitcher of the Year, Rhett Lauder. Dude is just filthy. Has a changeup that's, you know, low 90s and is basically unhittable. So I did, unfortunately, in Vegas, the best number is plus 240. So I did add them to the account. But you can find plus 275 at DraftKings right now, which is a good number. I mean, Matt, they go 5-0 in the regional supers. They outscore their opponents 75-16.
Yeah.
And on the season, they're outscoring teams 583-207. Like that is unheard of in college baseball. And they hit 9 homers against Alabama. That tied a single game postseason record. This guy, Brock Wilkin, is their stud. Is their stud at the plate? 70 career home runs, all time home run leader. It's a team that has no holes, no weaknesses. And I think because we always look for the longer shots in college baseball, because of the variance in the sport just inherently, we've just kind of overlooked Wake Forest. LSU obviously is a team that would scare me in that top half of the bracket. And I will be looking to bet the under in game one when those lines come out, LSU and Tennessee, because I assume they'll throw Paul Skeens, the ace for LSU, and he is going to deal. And I also really like Tennessee's, you know, combined pitching staff. They're at 3.75, their weekend starting ERA. So I'll be looking at an under there. But bracket one, I have to get invested on Wake before that number gets any shorter.
Benny in the pants.
Yeah, it's you look here. I'm trying to listen. I like your position on TCU. I like your position. I know you have Virginia as well. Like, I just don't want to get involved in the other bracket because I think maybe the three best teams are all on the same side. I think. You could make an argument, Wake Forest, LSU, and even Tennessee. I know Tennessee has disappointed, you know, has some ups and downs over the course of the season. But, I mean, talent-wise, I think maybe the three best teams are all on the same side. And so it's real tough. And plus, you talk about depth. I mean, yeah, Skeens at the top is unbelievable. Might be the number one overall pick in the draft whenever it comes around. 188 strikeouts in 107 innings on the course of the season, if that tells you anything. But outside of that, the depth at LSU is at least a little wishy-washy and stuff. So, like, I like your position a ton on TCU and even Virginia because I think one of those other two teams, they're just in an easier road to the victory here.
No doubt. And ultimately, you know, the step up in class for Oral Roberts, I believe, will be too much for that team, as great as they were. And I rode them. We talked about that last week in Super Regionals. But, yeah, I added Virginia just because, I mean, the pitching staff, they had three transfer starters come in. Their last six starts, they've allowed 8 earned runs combined. They're weekend starters, 41 innings. 5 walks, 42 strikeouts over the last 6 starts. Like, that is just unreal. And that was viewed to be the weakness of Virginia. So I'm getting them at plus 60 in that second bracket. I'll gladly ride with those three plays here into the World Series.
Ben, we got to get back out on the course so you can watch me spray some stuff into the desert again.
I can't wait, man.
We got to get back out there.
Tradition,
I mean, I know.
Like on any other.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be incredible. Ben Wilson, everyone, thank you for joining us. We'll talk some more NFL player props here on the other side.
Ben in the beds.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from the show hosts and the guests, including Ben Wilson that was just on here. You'll get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page as well. You can sort those picks by sport, matchup, and event date. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to never find me at the top, and you can see the profit and ROI in which VSiN experts have the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro scriber today. $9.99. VSiN.com/subscribe. A little bit of breaking news coming through here, Kelly Bidlin.
What you got?
Our friends over at Legal Sports Report, Adam the Candyman and his crew over there. Legal sports betting signed into law in North Carolina. Could be having North Carolina as early as January 2024. So another state coming on board here. Welcome, North Carolina. Hopefully you join us in January so you can have time to bet the playoffs and certainly the Super Bowl.
I like it. You know what I like most about that, Matt, because it's just all selfish reasons, right, where I have family migrating to the Carolinas. Oh. So when I go to visit, bingo, there we go.
You get all the bonuses.
That's
and the,
right.
And the risk-free bets and all the things like that. The things that make betting and, you know, everywhere else but here so glorious.
Speaking of which, yeah. you first shared this with me, but I also got the same email. And I believe right now.
Don't jinx it. Don't jinx it.
Don't even, should I not even
don't
say
jinx it?
It?
Like, until we see it. Like, I don't know. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay, me neither. I'm like, until we see it. But it seems like we might be getting some of the markets that you guys get out there. That's all we can share at this juncture. Yeah,
listen. Vegas.
We might be getting some of the same markets that you guys get out there. It's going to be incredible. Got a couple of people said that on the Twitter machine over here, Kelly. We got GV who said it was interesting to turn on the television and look up at the contract incentive stuff. Just because, again, just stuff to think about. Look, it's slow, man. It's nothing but baseball day, and I ain't got no baseball bets. So let's talk about some other things, you know. Then we got Matthew Mayberry, who said, he said he can't believe that we didn't go with the obvious Cantlay is the guy that you don't want sitting next to you at the bar if you got to get into a bar fight with a professional golfer as your teammate.
Oh, I don't know. Cantlay's a quiet guy, man. You don't know what he's thinking under the hood. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's that guy
that could, like, flip.
Right, exactly. Like, I think he's quiet for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, maybe you get a few beers in that guy, he swings wildly one way or the other. Yeah. Either he's the life of the party, or, like, he becomes that friend that you don't want to take anywhere because he gets out of control.
Yeah.
I feel like Cantlay might be that guy. That's why he stays so quiet.
Keith says Hatton immediately came to mind. He also throws out Koepka and Woodland.
I mean, Koepka is... He'd be on the short list for me, but I think he's...
I don't know how much he'd care. That's the, you know,
exactly,
like, I want someone who's going to ride or die with me in that bar fight.
He ain't going to care about having your back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If he gets involved, someone comes at him, he might be good.
Yeah, but he ain't going to care about helping me out, man. Like, Gary Woodland, maybe. You know, Gary Woodland, maybe. The other guy, definitely, I don't want... Will Zalatoris for multiple reasons.
Man, this
one, he's tiny and he's got a back injury. You know, like I don't want Will Zalatoris either, right? Like, I mean, this is no good.
You guys brought up Fitzpatrick. I think, okay, on the other side of it, I think Will Zalatoris is the leader of the clubhouse right now.
It's like you're sitting there and you're like, you're just having a beer with him because, like, you're talking about, hey man, I'm sorry you're injured. Like, you know, you're just trying to console him and all this. Next thing you know, you find yourself in a fight and he's all like, I can't do anything. I got a back issue, man.
And I weigh 97 pounds.
Like, I weigh a 105 soaking wet, and I got a back issue. What do you want me to do? You know?
Kevin Streelman, also not a good one to have. Brian Harman.
I just don't think Willie Z has it in him to break a beer bottle over someone's head. You know, like, you got to do what you got to do. Again, all these things that I believe Tyrrell Hatton not only would do, but has done.
Yeah,
actually.
Zalatoris would go to break the bottle. It would not break, somehow swing back and hit himself.
And knock himself. Yeah, he'd knock himself out on the bar with all that. So one of the things I did find interesting here, some of the news is coming out in these mini camps. And if you've been following along, it's not that we didn't believe that Bryce Young was going to be QB1 for the Panthers, but, you know, them going ahead and making it known this early, I think is a good thing for us as bettors, right? Because then we can start to look at some of these markets in which maybe it was priced in that he wouldn't start until, I don't know, week 3 or something like that, week 4, whatever it might be. So you take a look here. He's been given all the first-team reps at mandatory minicamp. Per the Charlotte Observer, Young has showed off his chemistry with Thielen on a couple of throws, even as the veteran receiver bailed the rookie out on some off-the-mark tosses. Young has looked for Thielen quite often during the offseason program, and the veteran's ability to get open across the middle will be an asset for Young in his rookie season. Thielen made a pair of diving catches on the day, and he probably had the best outing of any of the offensive playmakers during the workout. Now, that is from the Charlotte Observer. We did have a situation in which Adam Thielen went for over 700 receiving yards last year, and what you could only consider to be a down year for him. His prop is set at 600.5 receiving yards, Kelly. And so if we're getting news early on here that Bryce Young's definitely going to be the starter, and that Thielen, at least early on, has looked to be his kind of security blanket. So as opposed to a tight end, where we say a lot of times, like, oh, we got to get him a tight end for these rookies, Thielen might just be a glorified tight end, right? Like, he might be playing kind of a glorified tight end role here for this Panther squad. And as we know, we just talked about how many guys got to 600 receiving yards last year, right? There were 45 different guys that got there. If we look at Thielen, and again, like, it's not like they're going to double team Thielen anyway. Like, he's going to get one-on-one coverage. They still have DJ Chark. They still have Terrace Marshall. It's interesting from a Thielen perspective. And then even from a passing perspective with Bryce Young, 3,500.5. I kind of thought that they priced this as if he was only going to start maybe 15 or 16 games. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe they thought that he wasn't going to get the nod from day one, because when you go in, 3,500 yards, if he plays 15 games, is about 233 yards a game. If he plays 16 games, is about 217 yards a game. And if he plays all 17 games, Kelly, it's only 206 yards a game, right, to get to 3,501 yards for Bryce Young. I don't like to play a ton of overs in these season-long props, but, I mean, again, if he's going to play, we're not going to bake an injury because that's just not what we do if we're playing props for an over standpoint. So if we think that the guy can play all 17 games, if he can't throw for 207 yards a game, then the Panthers might be one of the worst teams in the NFL. Maybe we should be betting unders on them and like going crazy on alt unders even or something. So just something to kind of process here. He's going to be the starter.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently has some chemistry with some of the receivers and stuff going on. And again, if he plays all 17, we're looking for 207 yards a game average.
I think it makes a lot of sense. I think for him, he's going to be a guy that I'm going to wait till I see it with him. He's so small. He's just so small. I need to see a year, I think, before I get overly excited about Bryce Young. I thought the Thielen note that you brought up is that one makes a lot of sense and is very, very telling to me. And I think if that's one to keep your eye on, I think as we go here and as we go into training camp and stuff like that, if we start to hear reports like that to continue, because I think the way you laid it out makes a ton of sense. Where think of him as that goat, the easy dump off to tight end that these young quarterbacks rely on. Adam Thielen would make a lot of sense to fill that role for Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, if you look last year and what it was definitely a down year for Adam Thielen, right? I mean, he had 70 catches for 716 yards, right? And so if he kind of becomes more of the go-to dude, chain mover, bailout guy, or whatever, it seems very likely that he could kind of equal something close to that, even with Bryce Young being his quarterback. And you don't even need that 116 extra yards that he got. You're just looking for 601 yards out of Adam Thielen. So something interesting to kind of look at there. One of the other ones that did catch my eye was the fact that Justin Herbert, according to The Athletic's Daniel Popper, Herbert has attempted 5 throws of at least 40 yards downfield during a single 7-on-7 workout. Keenan Allen, who got 2 of those passes, said that the offense will make use of Herbert's cannon under new offensive coordinator Kellen Moore. And in the practice recap, Popper said, "This is not Joe Lombardi's offense anymore. That much is clear." And the reason we say that is because Justin Herbert, despite having that cannon that Keenan Allen just spoke of, ranked 26th. This is criminal, Kelly. 26th in yards per attempt for Justin Herbert last season. There were 25 other NFL quarterbacks that had a higher yards per attempt than Justin Herbert. They should have run Lombardi out of there after 5 games if that's
that
the case.
Silly.
It's just absolutely insane. Again, his prop, it's not low. It's set at 4,450 yards, but they're going to be a high-volume passing team as it is anyway. They did add a weapon in the draft as well. And then, again, if they're going to be throwing the ball downfield, if they're going to be taking advantage of all of this, it's certainly interesting from a Herbert standpoint as well.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, look, I think that offensive coordinator change is going to be pretty big for them. And I mean, look, you could talk about it 2 ways, right? It's like, well, the Cowboys talked about all they wanted to do is run the ball more. So, okay, guess what? You got an offensive coordinator coming in, playing it on passing the ball a lot. I like that. Well, my concern with that team, though, is just they've got one of the premier wide receiver duos in the NFL that can never stay healthy, right? And it is it's just getting tiring because, man, I love watching those guys play. And when this team has been healthy the past couple years, they look really, really good on offense.
Boy, I sure hope that this does play out, that we're going to see more of what Herbert can do with his arm and what he can do with that arm of his, because it's going to be fantastic to watch. When we come back, our final U.S. Open plays.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points. You can redeem online for bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. If you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert those points into MGM Rewards points you can use for dining, shows, hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resort properties up and down the strip and nationwide. Sign up at BetMGM Or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions do apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer you the resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions, and you must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customers can take advantage of this offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued in non-withdrawable bonus bets, and those expire 7 days after issuance. If you do have a gambling problem, as always, please 1-800-GAMBLER. Kelly, we have people coming in, and then before we get to our picks here for the U.S. Open, we're going to continue this golf discussion of who you'd want sitting next to you at the bar if you had to get into a bar fight, who's got your back. And then we just remembered, how did we leave Jon Rahm off the list? We're talking about a big old dude who has had anger issues in the past. Now he's a little bit better about those anger issues but we have seen this guy get as mad at himself as you can possibly be at a human being. Now take all of that anger and put it towards somebody else working for us in our favor to go along with what looks like to be some meaty legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got some junk in the trunk to put some real, you know, power behind a good punch. Like, I think Rahm is right on up there. I think you made your final standings here.
I did. This is this has been a hot topic on the show. We've got a lot of tweets. Trip Tepper, thank you for tweeting in, providing background research that apparently Pat Perez told Colt Nost on his podcast a few years ago, that he was basically asked the same question, and Tripp says he snap called with Jason Kokrak, which I can see that.
Creepy eyes.
I don't trust his smile. I think there's something always going on there. I'm with him on that. So, I'm sure there's a lot of things on this show we probably didn't do perfect today. Biggest oversight, though, was not having Jon Rahm at the brought up in this conversation. So, I'm going to go with Rahm number one, Hatton number two, but if we're going pound for pound, it's still Hatton number one.
And Jason did tweet in as well, like, we can't leave Shane Lowry off of there.
Yes, so Shane Lowry's three. That was an oversight by us as well. You're right. Shane Lowry, three for me. And then Jason Kokrak, I'm putting four.
But I think we overwhelming, if we're doing the podium for guys that we would rather not have, it's got to be Willie Z is the word.
Yes.
Just not a big dude to begin with. Got a back injury? I mean, like, come on. Like, we don't want an injured guy. Like, at least with Colin. Colin's second for me, by the way. Morikawa would be second for me. But
he'd be second for you? That's what I'm trying to come up with. Who'd he even close to Will?
Well, Colin's small. He's just soft-spoken, and he's there. Like, I can't see him getting mad enough to help me in a bar fight.
And a couple people mentioned Tiger about things. I'm like, look, I feel like if a bar fight broke out even around Tiger, everybody in the room would be sued.
Yeah.
Like, there'd be lawsuits coming at you before you could even do anything.
Yeah, I'm all right with.
Can't go with that one.
I'm all right with all that. So, all right, so let's get back to our betting card here for the U.S. Open again, guys. Talked a little bit about Xander Schauffele. Am on him. Jordan Spieth, who I think not only fits what I'm looking for from a player standpoint, but kind of under the radar, has been playing super, super solid golf and hadn't won yet, which is why I think people aren't paying attention. But, you know, T6 at the Waste Management, T4 at Arnold Palmer, T3 at the Valspar, T4 at the Masters, second at RBC Heritage, and then T5 at the Memorial. Like, he is having a very, very, very good year. And so I do like Jordan Spieth a ton. We talked about Max Homa. Yeah, you know, is what it is. If he's contending, it wouldn't surprise me, but not really the form that I was hoping he'd be in as we would lead into this. That was a bet that was made about 2 months ago.
Matt, I'm just going to jump in a couple of these here because Xander, we share. I'm with you on that. Bet it this week, same kind of number, same reasonings. This guy's just been in great form recently. Like you said, does everything well, right? We know his major records here. He hasn't been able to come through with the win yet, but I think he's going to be real live this week. So he's on my card as well. Jordan Spieth, I like it. I didn't do anything with him yet, but I do like that bet, and it might be something I do add something with him here yet today. And Max Homa, I understand why. I actually didn't make the bet like a few months out. Completely understand why everybody did. I'm with you. I think if you did have a cash out option on a 50-1 or something now, I would use it probably and just get off that position. But I like what you got so far.
Colin Morikawa is a guy that I took at 38-1 and got a little bit more at 40-1. It's one of those things where, look, this guy, he had some back spasms. He didn't want to put in jeopardy being able to play in this tournament, so he pulled out of the Memorial. He was two strokes off the lead. And, Kelly, if Colin Morikawa had gone on to win that tournament, Colin Morikawa would be in the low 20s. And the fact that we're getting him in the 30s, I think, is just an overcorrection here. I like him a lot. He's number one in this field in those long iron approaches that we value so much. He's number two in this field in the short stuff, which we think we might see some layup situations on some of these holes where 100 to 125 yards. He's number two in the entire field. He's 10th in good drives, so we want someone that's not spraying it all over the place. And he's actually 17th in lag putting, which I think is pretty interesting this week because we have really, really big greens, and I just don't want dudes leaving themselves tricky second putts. I want them putting it close, and he's actually 17th in lag putting, though he's not great. He's not a great putter, but he's at least like leaving it up there where he's not killing himself from a three-putt perspective.
I think that's a good point. Yep, that's going to be real important.
The other three, look, these are just guys we always will sprinkle a little bit on long shots, but on a longer shot from an outright perspective. But these are more plays from a placement market standpoint. But I have Wyndham Clark. I have Mito Pereira. I have Eric Cole. Listen, Wyndham Clark, by the way, T10 at Waste Management, 5th at the Valspar, 6th in Punta Cana. He won the Wells Fargo, T12 at the Memorial. Wyndham Clark has been playing some very – very solid golf. He's 21st on the tour this year in strokes gained tee to green. He is 9th on approaches from 100 to 125 yards, which is a bucket that we really, really like this week. And in the last 24 rounds, he is 5th in this field in strokes gained approach overall. He has been playing great, great golf. Mito Pereira, shout out to our boy Rick Gaiman, who does give us live stats over there on his site, Rick Rungood. Mito Pereira has actually been playing really, really good golf. This was nothing more than a numbers play for me. I have not watched a single second of LIV Golf. But where Mito Pereira was showing up in my model, Kelly, I just could not avoid a triple digit on Mito Pereira. But, again, more of a placement market bet. I'm going to have some top 40s, top 30s, top 20s type stuff like that. And then Eric Cole. By the way, Eric Cole might be hashtag good at golf, guys, by the way.
Hashtag joggers.
Yeah, 250-1. I don't think he's going to win, but – 2nd at the Honda, 27th at the Players, 5th at the Mexico Open, 23rd at the Byron Nelson, 15th at the PGA, 24th at the Memorial. He was 6th last week in Canada. Like, this guy is playing very consistent, good golf. A top 40 bet all day long for me on Eric Cole. By the way, Kelly, just a sneaky little maybe if we don't, you know, maybe a first-round leader bet on an Eric Cole. You guys remember... Yep.
He's been up there a lot.
He was leading the PGA and then got delayed and then came out cold and had to play that, what was it, 16? It's like the hardest hole on the course or whatever it was. So he ended up doubling and not getting it home. But again, a guy that showed just this past week in Canada went for 63 in the final rally. He has low rounds in him for sure. Justin Rose, placement market bet. Russell Henley, Siwoo Kim, placement market bets. And I have Bryson DeChambeau to miss the cut. And this is just strictly based off. I don't think his game translates here. I don't think this is going to be a bomb and gouge course. I think if you find yourself in the rough, it's going to make for some really weird shots and some really awkward positionings and not going to be able to get where you need to be on these greens to have success. And so I just don't think this course fits Bryson very well. And so I took the plus 178 for him to miss the cut.
It's a guy we haven't really discussed a lot. He's a guy we haven't really discussed a lot, Bryson. I've seen a lot of respect guys that I respect that bet on golf using him as a bet this week.
Oh yeah.
Do you think it's just from the bomb? They're thinking bomb and gouge strategy, because I don't really get it.
I think they're just looking at his success at U.S. Opens and courses like in courses that are typically set up like that. But like, I just don't think this course is going to play that way. Yeah. So I'm just in a different boat than these. I could be wrong. Like, I might end up looking like an idiot. Like, I'm fading Rory in matchups. I'm fading DeChambeau at every chance that I can get, because I just don't think those guys are going to be able to spray it and get away with it. Now, listen, at the PGA, Kelly, if you remember, here's the thing. Yes, Bryson had success, but he didn't have any sort of inherent disadvantage, because he actually had a built-in advantage here. Because if you remember, we talked about this on the preview. If you were 2 feet off the fairway, it was the same rough than if you were 25 yards off the fairway.
Not
right?
The case this week.
Not the case this week. If you are close to the fairway, you're still going to be able to play from a first cut. You're still going to be able to – now, you might not have the greatest positioning, but you're not playing out of this very tricky Bermuda rough, right? So he had a built-in advantage right there, because guys that even weren't missing all that much were still playing out of the same stuff that he was playing out of, and that's a big advantage for him.
Yeah,
you know?
One of the other big drivers that I'm on a full fade of this week is Cameron Young. He's been a disaster here recently. I'm fading him. All my bets up at VSiN.com, Matt Browns as well.
Guys, stick around for Lombardi Line. Our girl, Stormy Bonantoni, going to have a an emotional first segment, I'm almost positive. Used to work for the Vegas Golden Knights. She is also a Vegas born and raised, and so big win for her last night as well. So stick around for my girl over there. Thanks for everybody here at A Numbers Game.